Good morning, everyone. Welcome again, in Christ's name. I appreciated the devotions that Kevin had this morning. That story of Balaam is a very interesting story. And you just wonder sometimes why he can't be smart enough to know that God doesn't change his mind. And actually, God was doing Balaam a favor. If you don't go with the men, you'll stay far away from the action. But if you go with the men, then I guess I have something else for you. And I thought it was interesting when the donkey crushed his foot and sat on him. I don't know what all the donkey did, but Balaam said, "Oh, you know, if you don't want me to go, I'll just go back home." And God said, "Nope, you just go ahead." I have to wonder sometimes if God thought that Balaam just gets what he deserves and he's just going to make it happen because he asked him so hard. So anyway, that was an interesting thought that stood out to me this morning, or I thought it was interesting. So this morning, for a message, if you would, turn to Philippians 4, verse 11 through 13. You know, as young people, sometimes do you think that life is complicated? TJ, do you think life's complicated sometimes? You think so? Trent, you think so? What about you, Leanna? You think it's complicated? You think it gets worse as you get older? Some of the older ones think it gets more complicated? Probably all would say that. So, we think that life is complicated sometimes, and part of the complication is that we want to know what, we'd really like to know that God has something better for us than what we're experiencing right now. We kind of think that sometimes. You know, life is boring, and especially when you're 15, and the whole year is ahead of you before you can join the youth. I remember that was a long year. Well, 14 was a long year. 15, whatever. The year before I joined the youth was a long year. Because you're just sure that there's going to be something better ahead. But life goes on even after you join the youth, in case you don't know. It does. So let's read Philippians 4. Verse 11 through 13, Paul says, "Not that I speak in respect of want." He just got done commending the Philippians for helping him out with some their love to him. He says, "Not that I speak in respect of want, for I have learned in whatsoever state I am therewith to be content. I know both how to be abased, and I know how to abound. Everywhere and in all things I am instructed, both to be full and to be hungry, both to abound and to suffer need. I can do all things through Christ, which strengtheneth me." And those are nice words to read. I can do all things through Christ, which strengtheneth me. And they're nice to read in church. I know how to be abased, or I know how to be put down, and I know how to be lifted up. I know how to experience plenty, and I know how to experience want. And I know all this, I know this, but whatever, however it is, I can be content, Paul says. Contentment, that's a hard word. And what is it? What is contentment? Is contentment a fruit of the Spirit? Anyone? That might be a little bit of a trick question. Is it a fruit of the Spirit? It is? Okay.
It is a result of the fruits of the Spirit.
Okay. Can you have too much contentment?
All in the wrong things.
Okay. So a fruit of the Spirit that you can't have too much of. So can you have contentment in the wrong things? Okay. You could. You can think a couch potato. Is a couch potato content to let the world go by sometimes? So contentment you can have contentment in the wrong things. You can be content in things you shouldn't be content in. And you can be content in good things too, which are good. It's a result of a godly life. In 1 Timothy 6, it talks about godliness with contentment is great gain. And if you couple the two together, it's a very good thing. So contentment. The dictionary says that contentment is a state of satisfaction and happiness. Or at least that's one dictionary said that. So contentment is a state of satisfaction and happiness. There's a group it's a movement maybe, called a minimalist movement. And they say that contentment is found in doing with little, with less, getting rid of things. And that's where your satisfaction comes from. It can, but just that in itself is not going to produce contentment. So is contentment a feeling? Am I content if I feel content? Maybe. Is contentment an action? It's something I do, like getting dressed. I can be content. Well, it's a choice. I guess that in that that way, it's an action. And we have the power to do the action. We have the power to choose to be content. But we don't really have the power to feel content. I don't know if that makes much sense to you. But we can't really choose how we feel. We can just choose what we do. Contentment it's a choice that we do. And like was already mentioned, we can be content in the wrong things. We can be content, if you're at our house, some of the children are content to let others do the dishes after lunch. And others are content to let somebody else weed the garden. That kind of contentment is not really a good kind of contentment. But sometimes we can be, as we think of it, as contentment is used in the scriptures, at least what I could find, it has to do with being satisfied with what we have and being thankful with what I have and where I'm at for the moment. It's not saying that God will never call me to do something else. It's not saying that God will never provide an opportunity to have something more. But contentment is basically being thankful with what I have and being grateful for what God has blessed me with right now. We could say that an opposite of contentment is discontentment. That's one thing. But if we think of contentment in a negative way, a couch potato versus a workaholic, I guess that's one way you could contrast it. You could say that ambition is another form or is a little different than some types of contentment. So is ambition wrong? No, I wouldn't say so. Think of a young child. Ambition is a God-given thing. But think of a newborn baby. Newborn baby comes in, they're helpless, and they can't do anything. So would it be right for that, would we be worried if that baby was just content to stay there all its life, helpless, and just let the world go by? We'd think there's something wrong, and there would be. So God created a natural growth for this baby. And that helpless baby turns into somebody that's grabby, and they grab your hair, and they grab pencils, and they grab things, and they reach for stuff. And they grow a little bit more, and they're always reaching for something. There's an ambition and a drive to learn that God puts in this baby. And so ambition is a good thing. Ambition is something that God is God-given. And as many of us young men and young women, we have ideals, and we have things that we want to accomplish, or at least I think so. I had lots of ideals and ambition when I was young, and I still do. There's places that we want to go, and there's things we want to accomplish. And I had goals set. By a certain age, I wanted to accomplish this and that and the next thing, and it seemed like life was driven by what I could accomplish. It was ambition. And I know there's others that have probably a lot more ambition than what I have. And that's ambition, used rightly, is a very good thing. But ambition can be used wrong. And ambition ambition is something that we can take and use for ourselves. And it can be used in a covetous way, you could say. Ambition is a good thing if it's channeled in the right direction. So we could say that contentment is a satisfaction with what I have. Ambition is a desire to accomplish and grow. And both of them are useful. Can we have both ambition and contentment? Think that one through. Can we be content without losing ambition? And can we be content without getting stagnant? If a person is stagnant, they're basically, they just give up and they have no ambition. And they're just there, content, or at least not outwardly trying to change anything. So ambition is the spark that provides growth, provides the stretching part of us, the part that we look to expand our horizons, and the part that we try to grow and mature and better ourselves. And contentment is a satisfaction and happiness. And on the surface, they look like they work against each other. But God is not opposed to change in a good way. God is not opposed to change in a good way. I'd like to read Galatians 1, verse 13 and 14. Here, if you want to turn to that. So, we talked about contentment can be misguided. And ambition can be misguided. Both of them can be misguided. Even though they're good things, they can both be used in a wrong way. Ambition can, just all out ambition for the wrong thing, turns into a self-serving, lift myself up by my bootstraps type of thing. Look at me. Misguided contentment is just the opposite. It's sit on the couch, watch the world go by, everybody else owes me a living thing. Both of those are misguided. Good things that are misguided. And Paul Let's, in Galatians 1, 13 and 14, this is talking about Paul's misguided ambitions here. So Paul says, "For you have heard of my conversation or my lifestyle, how I used to live in the Jews' religion, how that beyond measure I persecuted the church of God and wasted it, and profited in the Jews' religion above many my equals in my own nation, being more exceedingly ambitious of the traditions of my fathers." So Paul was very, very, very ambitious, and he was on his way somewhere. And I think Paul I don't know what all his mind was, but he was ambitious there. And then in Galatians 2:20, he is converted in between there. So now Paul he's still ambitious, but for a different reason. He says, "I am crucified with Christ. Nevertheless, I live. Yet not I, but Christ liveth in me. And the life which I now live in the flesh, I live by the faith of the Son of God, who loved me and gave himself for me." Paul's focus has changed. He's no longer profiting in the Jews' religion. He's no longer profiting by religion. But he's still zealous and he's still ambitious, but it's for a different cause, a different reason. In Matthew 6:24, we have the two masters thing that Jesus said. Jesus said, "No man can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or else he will hold the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and mammon." The two masters concept is very important for how we exercise ambition. And contentment, for that matter. Who do I serve? It goes back to contentment and ambition are not an end in themselves. But it's influenced by who do I serve? Am I serving self or am I serving God? Or am I serving, serving God? If I'm serving self, the ambition is all to drive me up. And contentment is not. There is no contentment there because I'm always looking for the next thing, and more things. There's no contentment if I'm serving myself or serving something besides God. A right master. Ambition is very healthy when there's a good place to channel it. If I'm crucified with Christ, channel the ambition to build God's kingdom. And if we have ambition and contentment at the same time, if we have the right master, we can channel the ambition to build God's kingdom. And we can also be content that we're fulfilling his will for our life. But sometimes we separate the spiritual from the physical. It's a tendency that we have. Or I do. I can do it easily. Do I separate the spiritual from the physical? Do I profess to be channeling my ambition in the right direction, but then because I profess that Christ is Lord of my life, do I channel the ambition and take some of the glory for me? And do I take the accomplishments of my ambition and harvest it for me? And do I uncrucify parts of my life? Do I try to mix it a little bit? John Bunyan talks about a man called Mr. Facing Both Ways, who keeps one eye on heaven and one eye on earth. He sincerely professes one thing and sincerely does another thing. And do I do that? Do I tend to uncrucify parts of my life and harvest some of my, become discontent and take some of that ambition personally for myself? And often, we think of ambition in the sense of material gain and building an empire and building, acquiring things. But ambition is something, it's just a goal that we have. It might be we're tired of where we are. I might be tired of this and that. And it's different for different people probably in exact positions and things that we face. But we have a desire for excitement. Sometimes we're restless, and sometimes we have a desire for excitement, for change, for unique experiences. But if we're serving a different master, we can become addicted to that change. So we travel here and we travel there and we're looking for the next big thing. But after a while, we tend to become jaded because it's like a drug almost. The excitement wears off and we have to do more exciting things to feel fulfilled. So how do I look at my life? How do I feel? How do I feel content? I don't know, always. But probably the biggest thing is to be thankful. Gratitude. We're told to be content with such things as ye have in Hebrews 13:5. Be content with such things as ye have. For he hath said, I will never leave thee nor forsake thee. All of us can find something good about what I'm doing, where I'm at, and the situation that I'm in. If nothing else, you can always be thankful that it's not worse, which is, it could always be worse. Contentment is listed in the New Testament as being satisfied with what we have in a material sense, money, food, our position in life. Contentment is not listed as a fruit of the Spirit. And I think it's possible that, and part of the reason is because it's something that we can apply in a wrong way. If you look at the list of the fruits of the Spirit in Galatians 5, all of those fruits can be, there's no limit to the practice of those. There's no limit to them. And the more those are exercised, the more they are like God's Spirit, like God. But contentment is something that's intentional. And ambition, focus of ambition, is something that's intentional. It's something that's directly tied with being crucified with Christ. It's directly tied to that. And if for me to be intentional about my ambitions and my contentment, it requires a choice. And that choice is the action that I have to take. You know, contentment is possible to apply in the wrong way, and it can distort, if we apply it in a wrong way, it can distort a view or a witness for Christ. First Timothy 6 says that godliness with contentment is great gain. Godliness and contentment is great gain. And says, we brought nothing into this world, and it's certain we can carry nothing out. And I have a tendency to spend a lot of time on getting things that I think are going to make me happy, or I can convince myself they'll make me happy. And I can think, if I think on it long enough, I can come up with all the good reasons why I need this thing. And I can, if I'm lucky, I can convince my wife that I even need it. But after I get it, I've said that it wasn't, I mean, I said if I'm lucky. She's not as easy to fool as I am sometimes on that. But if I get that thing, whatever it is, the newness wears off. And after a while, it's time to get something else. And the cycle can go on and on and on. But godliness with contentment is great gain. We brought nothing in, we'll take nothing out. But Paul says, tells Timothy to use what you have. He says, charge them that are rich that they be not high-minded, that they or trust in uncertain riches, but use it for God's glory. You know, if you have it, use it for God's glory. But it's an intentional, there's an intentional choice that it takes to not use things to make me happy. Godliness with contentment is great gain. Contentment frees us to serve. Do you think about that? Contentment can free us to serve. Contentment is not laziness or complacency, and contentment is not vacation. Not just saying, well, the Lord said he will provide, so I will trust him to bring me bread today. It's not that. But contentment is a choice, and ambition is a choice on how we channel it. Who do we serve, and who do we serve, or who do we yield control of our life to? So what are some things that we face where we struggle with being content? Sure, if you all look in your own life, there's things that you can probably see. And for many of us, sometimes the daily routine of life gets boring. Especially if we are not down with a family. It's probably worse for single people that are not tied to a family, to their own children, their own family. And yet it faces all of us. But our position in life can get boring. And we think, I need something more exciting to do. Another thing, young men, is a desire for a spouse. And maybe, you know, ladies as well. That's something, you know, if only life would be different, I'd be happy. I could be happy. Or if I had an exciting, if I could go to another country, that would be more fun than just plugging away here. Or being tired of current responsibilities. Or desire for more things. That's doesn't matter if you're married or not. Sometimes we go out and we have a job to do and we don't have the right tool, so I need the right tool to buy the, or if I had the right tool, then I'd be happy. I could get this job done. But then there'll be a different job tomorrow, so I'll need another tool then. And even comparing ourselves with others can make us discontent. And that peer pressure is something that affects all of us, no matter what age. Well, at least if, until you're 35. Probably some of you older ones aren't affected. But peer pressure is something that is a force that we deal with sometimes to a certain degree. But here again, it's an intentional choice. How do we deal with peer pressure? Contentment is largely a choice. So ways that I can exercise the action in the be, the verb part of being content, is be thankful. Be thankful. You know, Dad and Mom, if we exercise the gratitude, we can transmit it to our children. Do you ever come out to the breakfast table and children are like, why do we have to eat this? This is not good. They usually say it in a different tone, but, or, yeah. So we say, well, be thankful. Be thankful for that you have food. Well, but I don't like it. We still be thankful. But maybe they learned it from us. Maybe I do that. So be thankful. Express gratitude. Express gratitude for small things and big things. Have an attitude of being thankful. Another thing is choose to accept life as it is. I think Kevin talked about that a little bit. Sometimes we have interruptions. Sometimes we have disasters. Choose to accept life as it is and work with it. And help somebody else. If we can help someone, that's laying up treasure in heaven. That's part of what it says, charge them that are rich in this world. We'd probably say, we're not rich. That's for the rich people. But if you have good health, you're rich. And if you have enough food to eat, more than enough food to eat, you're rich. So you can take the good health that you have, and you can take the extra food that you have, and you can share it with somebody else. That's taking something I can do and helping someone with that. That's one example. Or, and some of you young people have helped us out a lot. I think last summer, it was just as hot as it was this summer, and we came back from a trip, and our garden was all weeded. That was an amazing act of help. I thank you for that. But that's something that we can do. We can help somebody else, even if it costs us something. Time, money, food, emotional support. We can take something that we have been blessed with and share it with others. So is it wrong to change our lives? Is being content just staying where I'm at and not changing? No, I wouldn't say it's wrong to change. But one thing I would encourage rather is ask God to open doors and show his will. God's not opposed to changing our situation, But sometimes he wants us to ask him for it, and he wants us to wait on his time. Think finding a wife or a husband, whatever. Sometimes God wants us to wait. And sometimes God says no. For whatever we're asking, he'll say no. Can we accept that, or do we have to keep asking and asking? And keep eyes open for opportunities. There's always opportunities around. They might be small, and they might not be very exciting. It might not be the thing to do or that we would choose. But exercise the opportunities that we have. There's some ways to do that. Paul says, in as far as the intentional thing again, Paul has given lots of things here. But in Philippians, again, I started with Philippians, we'll end with Philippians. In verse 3, or chapter 3, verse 7, Paul says, "What things were gained to me, those I counted loss for Christ. So all my ambition and all my position that I had, I counted that loss. And doubtless I count all things loss for the excellency of the knowledge of Christ Jesus my Lord, for whom I have suffered the loss of all things, and do count them but dung, that I may win Christ. And be found in him, not having mine own righteousness, which is of the law, but that which is through the faith of Christ, the righteousness which is of God by faith, that I may know him." Look at the intentionality that Paul is saying here. "That I may know him and the power of his resurrection and the fellowship of his sufferings, being made conformable unto his death, if by any means I might attain unto the resurrection of the dead." That I may know him and the power of his resurrection, if by any means I might attain unto the resurrection of the dead. Do you know, wherever we are in life, whatever we're doing, it will pass. And in 100 years, where will I be? It will largely depend on who my master was, who I served, and how I used the opportunities that I had. Let's kneel for prayer.